This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Gotti, and I played Libby on Star Trek Voyager. And you're listening to The Journey on Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be. Or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everyone at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, is...
Zachary Fruling.
Well, today we're going to be talking about Kes. And not just a little bit about Kes, we're going with an ultimate Kes marathon, but we're going to keep it as a mini marathon. So like three episodes that give you the best of Kes.
It has to be a mini marathon because there are only so many Kes episodes out there that are really genuinely Kes episodes.
That's true. And one of mine is just a Kes little vignette within an episode. So you can't even really count that one.
It's a Kes mini arc in a mini marathon. Yeah, I almost regretted coming up with this topic, Suzanne, because I came up with the idea, like, let's do a Kes marathon. And then I realized how few Kes episodes there really are, and it was really hard to come up with a Kes marathon. Because she's an important part of a lot of episodes, but there aren't that many episodes mm-hmm. that just focus on Kes.
That's true, but I mean, even in episodes that focus on a specific character, you still get a lot of the other people in there, here and there.
So you took a looser interpretation of a Kes episode than I did.
I took Kes scenes and Kes moments. I didn't go with Kes episodes.
Okay, mine are a little more Kes-centric episodes.
Okay.
The difference in our approaches to these things, Suzanne, has never kept us out of each other's desert island huts watching Star Trek, so...
Oh, that's true, and I'm never one to follow the rules, so you kind of expect that of me.
You are a rule breaker. I am too. People don't realize that about me, but I totally am, so...
Does that make us like Laverne and Shirley?
Yes. In a way.
I was thinking of their theme song, and I'm like, give us any chance, we'll take it. Give us any rule, we'll break it.
Gonna make our dreams come true.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen Laverne and Shirley in forever.
Okay, so I'm going to start wearing a giant S on my shirts.
Does that mean I have to wear a giant Z on my shirt?
No, because Laverne, and I'm more of the Laverne than you are. She always wears a giant L. I need to wear the giant S. You're definitely a Shirley.
I'm a Shirley. What have we just done to this episode of To the Journey? You thought this was a Star Trek podcast. Silly you. When I was a little kid, my mom had this little, it was a 9-inch tiny little black and white TV. I know mm-hmm. the model is an old RCA 9-inch television, black and white. I used to watch Laverne and Shirley on that when I was a really little kid. I have this very distinct memory of that.
Well, they've been playing reruns on Logo, and I'll have the TV on in the background while I'm working. And occasionally it'll come on, and I'll be like singing along with the theme song, and then I get stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
I was just going to ask if you were singing along with the theme song. Yeah, I had a hunch.
Of course I am, always.
Gonna make our dreams come true.
Doing it our way.
When we go to Dragon Con next year, Suzanne, we are going to do an epic karaoke duet.
Yes, we are. It will be A duet for the ages.
Put it on your calendars now, listeners.
Well, Kes was never one to break the rules, per se, but she did question them quite a bit. And one of the things that I thought of when I was thinking of Kes Marathon, what are we going to watch? The first scene that comes to my mind is from Eye of the Needle, where we see the doctor getting not even talked to by a crewman and just ignored, completely ignored. And Kes goes to the captain on his behalf. And so she becomes his champion in that moment. I'm like, that's something that you need to watch if you're going for a Kes marathon. You need this because that is essentially who Kes is.
She's an advocate.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I remember more about that episode, though? I remember her beverage choice of spinach juice with a touch of pear.
Well, you do know who introduced that to her, don't you? It was Tom Paris.
Well, that makes sense. Tom's a smooth operator. I can picture it. You got to try this spinach juice, Kes. Come back to my quarters, have some spinach juice, touch a pear.
That is the worst pickup line ever. Why would he use that?
And why spinach juice?
That can't taste good, even with the pear.
You're new to our culture. Try some spinach juice. How did this conversation come up?
Or maybe it was like an experiment. You know, maybe she's like the new Mikey. Give it to Kes. She'll like it.
No, seriously, though, Kes does a great job of advocating for the doctor because, you know, the doctor has to make this transition from being seen as just a hologram to being seen as part of the crew. And Kes really is the first amongst the crew to take that position with him.
Oh, absolutely. She never treats him like an object or a light switch or anything like that. She sees him for who he is. She even says he's alive, and just because he's a hologram doesn't mean he shouldn't be treated with respect or no consideration.
Yeah, not just a walking isolinear chip.
Yes. He's a doctor, not a doorstop.
He's a doctor, not a replicator. He's a doctor, not a hypospray. He's a doctor, not a isolinear chip. That's a good choice. I didn't think of that as a Kes episode, but it's such a good Kes moment. It captures her character and her inner nature so well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that scene alone lets you know exactly who Kes is. And she's going to fight for her friends. And the doctor is her friend. That's how she sees him.
Captain Janeway kind of laughs at her a little bit for thinking the doctor is sentient.
I think Captain Janeway laughs at her because she hasn't had her coffee. She's drinking vegetable bouillon.
Yeah, I guess they hadn't established the black coffee thing by then.
Yeah.
I guess when a show is new in season one, like Eye of the Needle in season one, you have to establish all these little details about characters, what they drink, what they do in their spare time. None of that's been fleshed out yet. So sure, have Captain Janeway. She's got to be different than Captain Picard. She can't just drink tea, right? So she's got to drink something different. Vegetable bouillon. It didn't stick either, obviously.
Who drinks vegetable bouillon during a crisis? That doesn't make sense.
It'll calm you down, calm your nerves.
I'm going to relax with a little bouillon.
I wish that had stuck for the entire series. There's vegetable bouillon in that nebula.
Yes.
It doesn't have the same ring.
It doesn't have the same effect as coffee.
Yeah, can you picture Neelix's better than vegetable bouillon, vegetable bouillon substitute?
Ooh, no.
Made with whale root, naturally. No. Ooh. No. But we're supposed to be talking about Kes.
You got started on the drinks. I didn't go there.
Well, the spinach juice with a touch of pear is just such an intentionally weird thing to write into that episode.
It is very random, yes. At least they didn't go wheatgrass.
It's like, were they trying to establish her as a health nut? Like, what was the intention of that?
I don't know.
From a writing standpoint. I don't really know either. It's unique, but it's quirky. It's healthy.
It's very quirky.
It's delicious, I guess, in a Jack LaLanne juice man kind of sense.
Yeah, I don't know why they did that. We want answers, people. Somebody find out why. Why spinach?
We want answers to these hard questions. We focus on the serious things here on To the Journey, obviously.
Exactly.
So my first pick for a Kes-centric episode is Cold Fire, mm-hmm. in which we see Kes start to hone and cultivate her brain-melting abilities amongst other telekinetic abilities she has.
You just like her trying to melt Tuvok's brain.
Well, we knew the Okampans were supposed to have these incredible mental abilities that they've kind of lost, and we know that those mm-hmm. abilities are resurfacing in Kes, and it's fun to see that get fleshed out a little bit, and because she really needed something. I think from a writing standpoint, she was a nice character, very relatable. She was an advocate for the Doctor, but she needed something to make her a distinctive character. And so, well, let's flesh out those mental abilities. And that's a way to make her, you know, stand out as some sort of unique, unique character. And you get to see Tuvok's face melting. So
it also put her more in contact with Tuvok, who becomes very close friend with her. So we get to see that relationship build.
Well, she establishes Tuvok's compassionate side because he takes it upon himself to become her mentor, which is logical, but I think he's also doing it. I know, I'm team compassionate Tuvok. You think it's all team logic Tuvok, but I think Tuvok's just a nice guy at heart.
Now, there is a little bit of compassion when Kes leaves and Tuvok lights the candle and we see it in his window.
Yes. I tell you, he's Mr. Sentimental.
That one time, yes. I will give you that one time, but that's it.
He's on a sentimental journey home.
Oh, Lord. Another good part of Cold Fire, we get to see Suspiria, the other caretaker.
Yeah, that's who was not as nice as the first caretaker. So,
no, she wasn't playing a little banjo or anything. She was just a mean girl.
What's hard about coming up with a mini marathon for Kes is that these episodes are all kind of isolated from each other. You know, there's not a lot to weave these aspects of Kes's character development together amongst these Kes-centric episodes. There are these little scenes in other episodes that do tie it all together, but these Kes-centric episodes are actually pretty disjointed from each other.
Yeah, they are, because then you get into weird episodes like Sacred Ground and...
Yeah, which is not... I wouldn't call that a Kes episode.
No, but I mean...
She's unconscious for all of
it. She's like, that's an easy acting day. Thank you very much. But you also get Warlord.
It's a Kes episode in the same way that Shades of Grey is a Riker episode, right? Riker is unconscious through the whole episode. Yes, it's about Riker, but not really. And yes, Kes is, it's about Kes. That's who they're trying to save. But she's not really in the episode in any meaningful way.
Well, she's in there in a meaningful way. So she gets struck by the energy burst. That's meaningful.
No, that's a Janeway episode, clearly. No ifs, ands, or buts about that one.
You can see that she cares about Kes, so kind of.
That's true. It's important for establishing Kes's emotional impact.
I'm grasping at straws here.
You're not saying Sacred Ground is on your list of Kes episodes to watch in our mini marathon.
No, I was just throwing episodes out there that are disjointed.
In Cold Fire, I love the look on Kes's face when she realizes she can see the atoms and the subatomic particles inside the cup of liquid. She's like, I can see beyond the subatomic. And she's got this great kind of inspiring look on
joy.
Her face.
Almost like joy, yeah.
Tuvok's like, there's nothing beyond the subatomic, Kes. She's like, yes, there is. I see with my own mental eyes.
That would be kind of cool to see.
Beyond the subatomic? See those quarks and leptons and... Whatever else is in there. Yeah, Kes has a budding career in particle physics if her career in sickbay doesn't work out.
Now I'm thinking of the song by They Might Be Giants, Particle Man.
I don't know that song.
I don't think I know that song. You got to look it up. You got to look it up. It's fun. Okay. So much fun.
As soon as we're done. Yeah. And I guess that's one of the things that I like about Voyager. Like, it's weird. She's got these telekinetic abilities, but they show these subatomic particles, and it's visually interesting. And Voyager is so great at this weird stuff.
Oh, something else that's pretty awesome in that episode. One of my favorite quotes is, your ship is known as the ship of death. I don't know why I love that, but it's just like, oh, yeah, it kind of is. Wherever they go, somebody's usually dying. It's like, you know, when Jessica Fletcher shows up in Murder, She Wrote, you know somebody's going to die.
In a way, though, Suzanne, this doesn't make sense to me. Think about it. Voyager has, like, set course for home, and they are punching it to get home. And they're going about as fast as they can. They take a couple detours, absolutely, because this is Captain Janeway, and she takes detours. We know that.
Science!
Science! They essentially are on a course home, though, right? So how on earth does news about Voyager travel faster than Voyager itself is traveling when Voyager shows up, and why do they already have a reputation in a place they haven't been yet? If they're essentially on the path home.
A grapevine.
How does the grapevine travel that fast, though? It's like they're going at warp 9 to get home.
Well, ships could be talking to other planets and planets talking to other planets. It's like a giant phone tree and they're all talking about Voyager.
Like a giant subspace relay network is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Which is faster than warp 9. I guess so. Subspace is faster than warp, right?
Well, with all the detours they're taking, yeah, it's faster than they're moving.
Yeah. I guess I was just thinking, it could be the detours. It could be the fact that subspace communication is faster than a starship. But clearly, word of Voyager has got there before Voyager itself got there. It just struck me as weird because Voyager is essentially headed that direction, going as fast as they can, other than the detours. So where in the hell did the word come from?
From other people that witnessed the ship of
death.
I'm
nitpicking today, Suzanne, apparently. Ship of death. Or ship of the Valkyries, as Q would say. Okay, well, we have extinguished cold fire here.
Fire is out.
What's your next Kes must-see?
Elogium.
Oh, I'm so glad that's on your list because it's not on mine.
Also known as Kes might be getting pregnant.
Also known as weird alien life forms think Voyager is sexy.
And also known as Kes eats dirt for no apparent reason.
Yes, also known as that, yes. You know, it's hard not to put the dirt eating episode on my list, but I didn't.
I had to. She eats dirt.
Yes, I guess the whole episode is worth it. I just don't find it a particularly interesting episode, honestly. But the dirt eating scene is worth it.
We learn a lot about Ocompan's puberty and how she gets these little like suction cups on her hand, and the father figure has to rub her feet until her tongue swells up. That is some really weird stuff. Who came up with that?
See, I guess I don't need Ocompan sex ed in my Kes marathon.
But not only is like Kes going through sex ed, now Voyager's getting hit on by these little life forms. Yes. So this episode is all about weird, weird sex.
There's a lot of exobiology in this episode. Yes, there is.
Sure, use the fancy terms. And also in this episode, Kes is introduced to another food by another crew member. So we go from spinach juice with a touch of pear to mashed potatoes and butter. Who introduces mashed potatoes and butter?
I want mashed potatoes and butter right now. See what you did? You just made me so hungry.
I would rather have rice. If it's a comfort food, it's going to be rice for me.
I know we always do this because we're totally willing to follow these tangents, and this is interesting. I would rather have mashed potatoes than rice, but when I had rice at my grandmother's house growing up, it was always brown rice with butter and sugar on it.
Sugar? Really?
Sugar. Sprinkle some sugar on top of the butter on top of the rice.
That is interesting. If I don't have gravy, then it's just salted butter melted on top of my rice.
Yeah, I like savory things, but yeah, we would always put sprinkle some sugar on top of the butter on top of the rice, and I don't know where that came from. If anyone knows, let me know. But I think her family was originally from a couple generations back was from Missouri, so maybe it's a Missouri thing. Are there any listeners from Missouri? And it's a Missouri thing. Let me know.
I have to try this.
Yes, I know. I'm more team mashed potatoes than team rice.
I will eat rice 7 days a week.
They are always introducing Kes to new foods, aren't they? Why is that?
Maybe to get her away from Neelix's awful, awful cooking.
They're like, Kes, come here. We know what Neelix's cooking is really like. We're going to hook you up.
You need to try this. This tastes good. Neelix stuff, bad. But then she goes from mashed potatoes in this episode to eating beetles. Yeah, I'm not team beetle. No.
Don't knock it till you've tried it.
Well, I've tried mealworms and I've tried crickets. I don't think I'm ready to move up to beetles.
I've tried grasshoppers, yeah.
Oh, cipollinis. Yes.
Yes. It was hard to leave this episode off because it's so weird. And it's a Kes-centric episode. Mm-hmm. But no, it didn't make my short list of three episodes for our Kes mini marathon.
We also get to see her relationship with the doctor grow a little more in this episode, where she asks him to fill in for her father.
Yes.
And you can see that touched him. And he was like, oh, well, yes, I can do that. But then we also get to see Neelix kind of being whiny about being a dad.
You know, we're back to whiny Neelix from last week. I don't like whiny Neelix. No. All the more reason not for this episode.
Whiny Neelix gives Tuvok one of the best lines. When Neelix is asking, well, what would I teach a daughter? And Tuvok's like, it would be the same thing you would teach a son. It's like, that's right. That's right.
Neelix needed to expand his worldview just a little bit in these early
seasons. Just a little bit. Truthfully, why wouldn't you teach your daughter the exact same thing you would teach your son? And vice versa.
In general, do Talaxians not work that way?
I guess not, since he didn't even think about it.
I guess we just don't know all that much about Talaxian women, right? The woman that Neelix ends up with, Dexa, she's pretty strong and independent. Mm-hmm. She's kind of a freedom fighter in a way.
She is. And she seemed to have raised her son very well, her son Brax.
Exactly. So where did this view of Neelix come from, that Talaxian men and women are different, or boys and girls are different?
Who knows? Silly Neelix.
I guess we just don't learn enough about the Talaxians to really know.
Yeah, true.
Maybe Neelix is just a 1950s Talaxian.
He's stuck in the past.
Warlord is on my list.
Aha, Warlord. Okay, interesting.
Strictly speaking, Warlord is not technically a Kes episode, right? This is more about Tyrion in Kes's body than it is about Kes, strictly speaking. We get to see Jennifer Lean doing some great acting Strictly speaking, it's not a Kes episode. But it's in Kes's body, So if anything's going to count as a Kes episode, this can count as a Kes episode. I love seeing Jennifer Lean act another character way more forcefully than Kes is. Parts of it feel a little forced for me. There are a couple moments inside the episode where I go, she's really kind of pushing her, you know, outward expression to be this kind of angry, overbearing character that she's not used to playing. But it's so fun to see her act a totally different character than we get to see her as Kes most of the time.
Oh, definitely. And she's very, very talented actress. I don't know if you've ever saw American History X.
She was
phenomenal in that role.
Big surprise. Let's talk about another movie Zach hasn't seen.
Shocking.
Never happens. The thing about Warlord, I don't actually like the episode very much. And that's why when I was putting my list together, I had to really decide, is it Elogium or Warlord that goes on my list? I find Elogium boring, and I find the acting in Warlord so great that Warlord had to make the list. But
Elogium is not boring.
I don't know. It's one that I tend to skip over.
But I do agree Warlord is very good. And you also get the invasive Tuvok mind meld, which is probably why you like it. Because it's Tuvok just running up to somebody and touching their face.
I do like the willy-nilly mind melds, yeah.
You do. You like Tuvok being invasive and all up in everybody's business.
I would say if you had the ability to mind meld, why wouldn't you want to mind meld with as many people as possible to get as many experiences as possible?
Boundaries.
You think Tuvok has like little notches on his space bedpost, like how many people he's mind melded with?
Think of mind meld as someone flashing.
No.
So instead of mind meld, Tuvok is flashing.
I cannot believe you just made that comparison.
I did.
No
because
way.
Because you're giving these people a flash into your own mind. You're seeing into theirs, they're seeing into yours, so you're flashing them.
It's not like wearing
Tuvok's
a kilt.
A flasher. No, kilt is not flashing. I'm talking the trench coat flashing.
Oh, trench coat. Okay.
Yeah. Not like kilt blowing that you see at Dragon Con, which is a thing, by the way. You're going to see that.
I'm looking forward to it. No, mind melds are not like trench coat flashing. I reject this comparison outright. The stuff that goes in our podcast is really off the hook sometimes.
The stuff that gets left out is really...
Yes, it is. A lot ends up on the cutting room floor, listeners.
You compared the mind meld to notches on a bedpost. Why can't I compare it to trench coat flashing?
No, I'm saying it's not like that. It shouldn't be like that. You're the one saying it's like that. I'm not at all.
But if you're doing it, that's what you're doing. You're seeing how many people you can mind meld with, and that's notches on a bedpost or trench coat flashing. That's what you're trying to do.
It just seems like such an efficient way to get knowledge and experiences from other people.
You know what's more efficient? Assimilation.
Yes, it is.
So what's stopping you from going that next step?
Because we're talking about the Kes era here. We don't have 7 of 9 yet, you know. 7 of 9 would be all about efficiency, yes. Just mind meld the heck out of it.
Oh, wow. With Warlord, we get to see the end of the Neelix-Kes relationship, because it's over.
And that's a really important thing for Kes, because we get to see Kes become essentially more self-actualized, not as dependent on Neelix, seeing other possibilities for herself. She's growing up, essentially, and that's a really important part of Kes's development. That's yet another reason why it has to be on my mini-marathon. And goodbye, whiny Neelix.
See ya.
Yeah, it is. It's also the death knell for whiny Neelix. Neelix, it's an, I would put that on a Neelix list too.
And I'm glad whiny Neelix goes away. I did not like
yes,
him.
Yes, we're all glad whiny Neelix went away. Yeah, I'm not sure I have anything else to say about Warlord. It's the Jennifer Lean acting show, and she's great at it. It's a fun episode for that reason alone.
Yeah, she does own that episode. It's very fun to watch.
Was it believable for you? Let me ask you this. Was it believable for you? Did you really buy that it was Tyrion and not Kes, not Jennifer Lean? Was it, you know, was she successful at portraying such a...
Yes. Yes, because I did not see hints of Kes in the background.
That's true. Maybe that's what I was getting at. Like, I think there are just a couple of moments where the intensity of the character felt a little flat for me, and Jennifer mm-hmm. Lean was trying really hard, and it was like 95% successful, but there's that still like a couple, like that 5% of her portrayal that falls a little flat for me and makes me go, oh, she's pushing really hard to play this other character. But it's 95% good.
Couldn't that also be seen as she's really pushing really hard with this character, but then you can kind of see Kes fighting internally?
Maybe that's what I was trying to ask that I didn't quite know how to ask. Is that a sign of Kes's character resisting? Or is mm-hmm. that a sign of it being a hard character to portray?
I saw it as Kes's character resisting. I saw, you know, Tyrion was getting all angry, and because Kes was in there fighting him mm-hmm. and not letting him have full control.
Interesting. See, now I need to rewatch it from that perspective and see if I can see some of the subtlety of the portrayal and this inner battle between the two characters in one body that maybe I'm not giving enough credit to.
Yeah, the struggle is there.
The struggle is there. Yes. Truth. So was Warlord on your list as well?
No, rounding out my list is Before and After.
Oh, that's on my list.
Well, good. I'm glad it's on your list. Then we can talk about it a lot more than we were going to. And say the only thing I don't like about Before and After is Andrew.
The grandson?
Her grandson. I don't like Andrew. I don't like Andrew.
He's a little whiny.
He is. He's a little hairy.
He is a little hairy.
I think he got that whiny gene from his father.
I would say so, definitely.
It's like, go away, Andrew. Please. Just go away.
Grandma, I made you a present.
I haven't made it yet. Oh, no.
We could really milk this Andrew mocking for quite a while if we let ourselves.
We could. Okay, question.
Please, yes.
We spoke of the Elogium.
We did.
In this episode, we have the Morologium. I mean, we saw her puberty. Is Morologium like menopause?
I don't know.
I don't understand. What is it?
It's more like Alzheimer's, isn't it?
Is it? That's distressing.
I think of it as being more like Alzheimer's than menopause, per se.
Yeah, it is.
Even the prefix mora seems to imply it's like death. Like, this something happens at the end of life, right? This is not menopause. This is the end of her life.
Well, it sounds too much like the puberty thing with elogium. Why would they make it more elogium?
Yeah, it's a weird word choice.
Why did they come up with that word? It doesn't work. It doesn't fit.
No, I would say the connotation is wrong for what it's supposed to describe or refer to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But no, it's more like Alzheimer's, right? She's having memory issues.
Yeah, because she gets the memory loss. But also the rapid aging. Because she got really, like, wrinkly and gray hair. Like, snap your fingers and she's wrinkly.
She only lives 9 years. She's going to age pretty quickly, right?
I know, but shouldn't she have been doing that throughout? Instead of looking all young and just all of a sudden, whoosh, wrinkles.
You mean in the episode, the transition should have been a little more gradual?
Yes. Yes, it should have been gradual.
Yeah, we don't get to see, like, an older middle-aged Kes.
Yeah. She's young and then, woof.
You want menopause Kes.
I don't necessarily want menopause Kes with hot flashes. I just want, you know, crow's feet Kes. Not all of a sudden there's like wrinkles everywhere Kes. Like somebody deflated her face.
I was hoping for hot flashes Kes personally, but... I agree with you, I think. The transition from old Kes to younger middle-aged Kes is a pretty stark contrast.
Mm-hmm. It is. But it's the same with Linus. We see her as a little baby after, you know, she comes out of the pouch on her back.
And then she's all grown up.
That just sounds painful. What happens to your spine during that?
Well, I guess we don't really know that much about Ocampan anatomy, so we don't really know where this birthing sac is. So like,
well, the birthing sac is on the back, but still.
Yeah, but it's like off to the side, not interfering with your spine, or is it like smack in the middle?
Your
like,
spine has to get in the way at some point.
I guess so, or your ribs or something, right?
Yeah, that just seems overly ouch. There's no epidural for that.
No, this doesn't make any sense to me at all. We're going to have an O'Compan anatomy lesson right now. There's a rib cage, right? So is the birthing sac on the inside or the outside of the rib cage? And if it's on the inside, how do they get it out? If it's on the outside, why don't you have a big baby lump on your back when you're expecting as an O'Compan? Maybe you do. Maybe Kes was walking around with a big baby lump on her back.
So you look like Quasimodo.
Yes. I guess it would have to be on the outside of the ribs versus on the inside of the ribs.
Either way, your spine is in the way. It's got to be. What if the baby just randomly grabs a hold of it as it's coming out? It turns into like Predator at that point.
Suzanne, you're very curious about anatomy. Have you thought about seeing an autopsy at some point?
You know how the Predator just rips out its enemy's spines? What if an O'Compan baby grabbed its mama's spine as it's coming out? It's automatic Predator.
Would you believe I've never seen Predator?
Seriously?
Seriously. I never have. You know, I'm a sucker for alternate timeline episodes in general. And so this episode is just a great episode. Kes aside, this is just a great episode that I love to watch. Because you get to see this great weird alternate timeline where Tom is Harry Kim's father-in-law.
Yes. And poor Chakotay is living without Catherine. No! No!
You know, what I have to remind myself when I watch Before and After is how little of Voyager had actually transpired by the time Before and After aired. Right now, we know the Voyager story. We know how it's going to end. So this episode doesn't have quite the same impact for me as it used to have. Because it used to be, when the episode was new, that we didn't know how the Voyager story was going to end. We didn't know whether they were going to get home or not. We didn't know how the character development was going to flesh out. And it was fun to see the writers imagine those things, you know, barely halfway, you know, into the journey. Not even halfway into the journey. Just, you know, the impact of that imaginative speculation about the characters doesn't ring for most of us like it used to when it was a new episode.
But I just thought of something. Because B'Elanna dies. Captain Janeway dies.
Yes, yes.
So Joe Carey's going to get promoted to chief engineer.
Presumably.
Does this Joe Carey live to make it home, unlike our Joe Carey?
You really like Joe Carey, don't you?
I do. Joe Carey should have lived.
Save Joe Carey. Save Joe Carey. You're always trying to save Joe Carey. Sure, he could live. I don't care. I have no iron in this fire. Joe Carey can live.
Good. Yay, Josh Clark lives.
Wish granted, Suzanne. Wish granted. Joe Carey can live.
What do you have against Josh Clark? Why don't you like Joe Carey?
Oh, I'm neutral on Joe Carey. I have no strong feelings about Joe Carey. Live or die. I hate to see him die. He's a good character, actually, even though I think he is, well.
Come on, he was on the Enterprise and now he's on Voyager.
Yes, if it's the same character.
That's our little bridge between those two.
I guess it's the same character, right?
It is. I mean, he was an unnamed tactical officer. He could now be Joe Carey engineer.
I still don't think he's as nice of a guy as you think he is.
Yes, he is. He's a very nice man.
He was a little quick to ask out 7 of 9.
I would be a little quick to ask out 7 of 9. What are you talking about?
Okay. Case in point. Okay. What else do you like about Before and After? That is one of the highlights of that season for me.
The doctor gets a name.
Do you like Van Gogh more than you like Schweitzer?
No, but he can never use Schweitzer because it makes him sad because he thinks of Freya.
That's true. Schweitzer retired.
And he's not going to go with Schmullis because of Dinara.
Yeah, he blacklists names pretty quickly, doesn't he?
Well, it makes him think of sad things like, you know, lost loves.
He was also flirting with Dr. Mozart as a name.
Van Gogh fits better than Mozart, I believe.
Yeah, I think Joe Van Gogh is the best name we've been able to come up with for the doctor.
Yes. Long live Joe Van Gogh.
Yes. Hashtag Joe Van Gogh.
Well, what is it about Before and After that you really like?
I think it's mainly the weird alternate timeline that I like, but it's interesting to see the way in which no one believes Kes as she's aging backward through time. They're all blaming it on the Morologium. And, you know, you think someone would go, maybe she's telling the truth.
No, they're all like, no, she's crazy.
Nope. It's just crazy old grandma, right, Andrew? Grandma be crazy.
That would have made Andrew interesting if he called her crazy. Or been like, oh, grandma, you're just losing your mind.
Grandma's losing her marbles. And the doctor believes her. I guess we were talking about Kes's relationship to the doctor and kind of the development over time and that being a really important mm-hmm. part of Kes's character. The doctor is the one who says, tell me what's going on, right? You know, he doesn't just reject yes. it out of hand.
No, because out of everyone, he knows her the best, even more than Tom, her husband. The doctor yeah, definitely. Knows Kes the best.
Definitely. It's also really sweet to see Tom and older Kes in a relationship together because she's aged quite a bit. She's old and he's still kind of in his prime and he still clearly loves her and finds her attractive, even the fact that they're, you know.
At that point, she's a total cougar.
I didn't think of her as Cougar Kes.
It is
but
Kes
okay.
the cougar. I can relate with that, Kes.
Okay. Fast forward to 40 years with Suzanne, everyone. You know what you're going to expect, so...
No, my husband is younger than me, so I can relate with okay. Cougar Kes.
Oh, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I thought it was picture you in 30 more years, but, you know.
No, I won't look all that wrinkly. I moisturize.
Do you think, and I know I'm going to get some hate mail for this. Do you think no. Tom and old Kes was a better relationship than Tom and B'Elanna?
Heck no.
I don't know. I kind of lean a little bit towards maybe Tom and old Kes were a pretty good match.
Oh, dude.
I know this is a heretical thing to say on To the Journey, but I think Tom and old Kes clearly liked each other.
They liked each other, but there was no fire there. There was no passion.
There was no cold fire there.
No, cold fire was a different episode.
She's like, you want your molecules stimulated? I got you covered.
I can melt your brain. Just let me know. No, honestly, old Kes, Tom, no, there's no passion there. There's mutual respect and love, but there's no passion.
Well, we don't know, right? Maybe there is.
No. Look at them. Look at them together. No. There's no.
They're kind of a pudgy old couple for Tom being so young. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not there.
Okay. You're right. Tom and Bonner are better. You're right. I know. You're always poking holes in my pet theories, but.
Yeah. That's what I do. I kill pet theories.
So it sounds like you don't really like Tom and old Kes. I still think they're kind of have a sweet, caring relationship. It may not have the fire or the cold fire that it should have, but she's old at that point. So she's going through the mm-hmm. Morlogium. It's understandable.
Well, I mean, I can understand it happening because B'Elanna was killed. So yeah, he can move on with Kes. But I just, if B'Elanna was still alive, that never would have happened.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
Because that, yeah, they were just... made for each other. They were.
It must be strange to be married to an Okampan, though. Right? That's a pretty short life together that you're signing up for with all the
things. It's got to be sad.
With all of the things from a normal lifetime compressed into a space of 9 years, that's a lot of ups and downs in 9 years.
Well, that and you know immediately that you're going to outlive your spouse. You're probably going to outlive your child. You might even outlive your grandchild. That's a lot of grief to deal with, to sign up for.
I know we've talked about this before, but like do mm-hmm. half Okampans and quarter Okampans, do they inherit the lifespan or do they get a fractional lifespan? Is it slightly longer than 9 years? Is it 18 years? How does it work?
I'm thinking it's slightly longer, but still, Tom is going to outlive them all. And that's just awful.
Is this like Mendel's pea plant problem all over again? Like the tall ones, and the tall plants and the short plants, you know, there's no middle plants. They're either tall or short. So you either get a long lifespan or a short lifespan. There's no middle ground. It could go that way too.
You leave us short plants alone, okay?
I know I'm still going all exobiological on you here today, but.
You are.
I just want to know, maybe it's a dominant trait and doesn't matter how much other DNA you've got. It just kind of, you know, the short lifespan is a dominant Okampan gene.
It could be. Seeing as how we only have the one specimen, we don't know. Poor Tom.
One thing mm-hmm. is for certain about Andrew, who is a quarter Okampan, right? He's a quarter Okampan. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yes.
He will be just as whiny when he gets old, no matter how long he lives.
Oh, kill it with fire. Kill it with cold fire.
Man, we're harsh today. We must be in a mood.
It's Friday.
It is Friday.
It's been a long week.
I guess maybe listeners don't know this, but we tend to record on Fridays most week because that's when our schedules match up. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long week already. If we ever sound tired, it's, well, it's because we are. So you got any other nuggets of wisdom about before and after? Anything you can't resist saying about it? We learn about Year of Hell. Very important.
We do learn about Year of Hell. We also see the Doctor with hair, which is fun.
Yes, I love that. It was a good look.
And then also a cute little line from Neelix as Kes is blowing out her birthday candle. He makes that call back to her only having one lung.
Oh, yeah. I never really noticed that. Yeah. I never paid attention to that. Yeah, absolutely.
Because she was so kind to give him a lung. She blows out the candle and he says something like, it's good to see that old lung is still working.
Wow. I never really picked up on that. I mean, I've watched it, but yeah. I never put two and two together on that. Who says Voyager has no continuity?
It's there. You just got to look for it.
Oh, I think why I like this episode, I think this is the version of Voyager I really fundamentally wanted. As much as I love Voyager and the way it turned out, I wish they had turned Voyager into a generational ship and we had seen more of that. And this episode is a microcosm of what I wanted Voyager to be.
Mm-hmm. They honestly should have been pairing up and having children. What was stopping them?
They weren't risky enough with the character development. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even despite the occasional marriage and stuff, which we don't really get in Star Trek very much. So.
Mm-hmm. Of that many people lost on the other side of the quadrant than where they're supposed to be.
There'll be a lot of coupling.
There would still be connections. There would be so many connections going on. You'd see coupling and you'd see breakups and people having to deal with working next to someone that they used to have an intimate relationship with.
Yeah, and they allude to this in Star Trek Beyond. You remember when Captain Kirk is describing mm-hmm. life aboard the Enterprise 3 years into the 5-year mission? And, mm-hmm. you know, they have little, you know, scenes of people hooking up with each other and fighting and, you know, someone getting thrown out of the quarters and the interpersonal dynamics of being in that isolated environment for so long. Voyager didn't really go there very much.
And it should have, because that's life.
Yes, yeah, that is life.
They were ignoring that big part of what life is, which is making connections with other people.
I'm of two minds about this, because on the one hand, Star Trek always goes idealistic very well, right? They want to show humanity mm-hmm. at its best or what humanity could become. They don't want to dwell in the muck of humanity very much. And yet life is messy and relationships are messy and, you know, people mm-hmm. are messy. So there's a tension between showing people for who they are and showing the best versions of what they could be in the future.
But even with relationships and getting messy, you can still have people that were in a relationship working together and it not be weird. Look at Will Riker and Deanna Troi.
Well, that got weird sometimes, but...
Like, yeah, but it was still... They could still function and do their jobs, and that didn't get in the way.
So are you saying you wanted more of that, more relationships that are just kind of normal and functioning like Riker and Troi, or did you want more drama mm-hmm. in relation, more interpersonal drama on Voyager?
I wanted all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get any of it really on Voyager.
No, just the occasional fight between Tom and B'Elanna. That's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. It's like, been there, done that.
You didn't even get to see Chakotay in Seven of Nine fight.
No, even fake Chakotay in Seven of Nine.
That would have been a great holodeck scene.
That would have been wonderful. I would have loved for the Doctor to have walked in on that one. That would have been great.
So I guess my point was just that before and after is my like little headcanon version of what Voyager could have been that I kind of wished it had been.
Yes, Joe Carey lives. Joe Carey lives.
I wouldn't want some of the details. Like, I don't want Captain Janeway to die, that kind of thing. But that's going to happen, too. People are going to die on the way home. And, you know, we didn't get to see very much of that either.
Yes, it is going to happen. And for you to have before and after, Captain Janeway and B'Elanna have to die.
Just like Edith Keeler.
Yes, Edith Keeler must die.
Yes, Captain Janeway and B'Elanna must die.
Poor Chakotay. So sad.
It was also really interesting to see Kes reverse age all the way back to being a little girl, all the way back to the time of her birth, conception, presumably. You know, mm-hmm. it was interesting.
We get to see her mother and father.
Yeah, it was just great. They found a way to visually show all this stuff because, you know, computer mm-hmm. graphics in TV shows was pretty new at the time. And, yes, and Voyager made good use of that for the time period.
Mm-hmm.
See, I was hoping for something a little more along the lines of the opening scene of Look Who's Talking. But...
Oh, wow. Really? You've seen that, but you haven't seen Alien or Predator. Dude!
Little Beach Boys Come playing on. In the background, you know?
Wow.
Or the O'Compan equivalent of the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah. I can't even go on now. We just have to end this here now.
There's nothing else to say. Yeah. For going Beach Boys, there's nothing else to say here. Okay.
No, and I have to get away from you before you get hurt.
Okay. You know what you need to do? You need to put together a list and send me the list, and I will check the movies off as I watch them.
I gave you one the other night. Did you watch it?
No, I was tired.
Dude, Shaun of the Dead, watch it. If you need a laugh, it's going to give you a laugh.
I'll watch it.
Add it to the list, I know. 10 years from now, you still won't see one of those movies.
You know, it's funny because I really don't move very quickly in this regard. I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it someday. I'll watch. Yeah, one of these days I'll watch it, Suzanne.
As you rewatch Dallas. What the heck?
I did rewatch all of Dallas, all 13 seasons.
I know you did.
Plus the new one on top of that, so. You think I could make a little time for one or two of the movies on your list, so.
You would think so. Berating Zach about the movies he hasn't seen isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Okay, can I just say one parting shot about the enemy? And this is just something that annoyed me in the episode. It has nothing to do with the Romulans. But when Geordi's down on the planet and he detects the neutrino beam, he says, "Wesley Crusher." And I think, how would you know that? Like, no one else on the ship is smart enough to have thought of this. And it just really irked me.
And you know, Geordi's been on the ship with Wesley for a couple of years. He knows that if Wesley's around, he usually saves the day. So,
yeah.
But yeah, he is jumping to a conclusion a little bit. Could have been like, Reg Barclay. That was him.
To the journey!
I feel like they missed an opportunity to put the Talaxian fur fly in Neelix's medicine bundle.
I think the fur fly is a little large to go in the medicine bundle.
It's more like a medicine backpack.
Yeah, that fly is huge. That's something you'd see in, like, if you play video games, you would see that in Fallout coming at you instead of a blood bug.
Yeah, the fur fly is the state bird of Talaxia.
So is it a bird or is it a fly? Which is it?
Standard orbit.
There's 4 volumes of Batman the Animated Series. The first 3 are pretty much the same season. They added Robin and they changed the name to The Adventures of Batman and Robin, but that's still the mm-hmm. same animation style, same voice cast, same creative direction. Then there was a bit of a break, and they revived Batman the Animated Series called The New Batman Adventures. Changed all the animation. Most of the voice talent was the same. But the story quality was just... It's kind of like a third season of TOS. I'm so proud of myself. Finding all these parallels.
The 602 Club.
I totally agree. He is... I love... It humanizes him because Professor X. We've seen him as the stoic teacher who can do no wrong, very wise. So to see him kind of in this sort of like, you know, youthful, kind of very energetic, very, it's just a fun character. And you get to see him develop. I think one of my favorite sequences in the film is watching him, the montage where he's teaching the kids how to hone their mm-hmm. powers and just him being in his element like that. And McAvoy really sells it. I mean, a lot of the dialogue in this film is a little cheesy and it's a little stilted at times, but there's not a single moment I don't believe him.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or even the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. You can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website, or grab the RSS link.
Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, speaking of contact information, Suzanne, when you're not busy studying up on Ocampan anatomy, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, that's a lot of studying I need to do.
It's complicated, I'll tell you.
It is. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. And I'll occasionally pop up in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about Star Trek with me in there. And Zachary, when you're not trying to figure out the right amount of pear to add to your spinach juice, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the network?
I cracked that one a long time ago, Suzanne. I'm onto bigger and better things. Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can also find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, there are a few people we'd like to thank from around the network. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, and the most benevolent warlord I know. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. And a special thank you and a shout out to our five associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of Trek.fm and To the Journey.
Well, join us next time, where Zachary's going to keep thwarting my ideas to change the timeline so that Joe Carey lives. But until then, this has been To the Journey.